Welcome to Defining Roles, a podcast about jobs you may have never heard of. I'm your host, Kate Barrett. Let's explore the possibilities of what's out there so that we can find our perfect role. This week's interview is a special one because I am interviewing my brother, Stephen. Stephen is a civil engineer and started his career in the Navy's Seabees, which is their engineering corps. In this episode, we hear the background of his career, why he got into engineering, and why he was interested in the military, and got to hear specifically about some of his different assignments and roles, and how they contrast to the private sector and what he's working on today. This has been very fun for me because doing all of these different interviews has made me more curious about friends and family and what they do and hearing about that side of their lives. We tend to get to know people in certain contexts, and it's fun to see different sides of them, especially when it comes to their career and areas where they're really talented. So this is a fun one to ask Stephen some different questions, hear some stories I haven't heard before, and just get to see the side of his career that I haven't known very much about. So this is a really fun one. If you've been enjoying the podcast, I would appreciate if you would rate and review, as well as share the episode if you think there's someone that would find it interesting, curious about engineering, or ways that they could use different skills in the military. With that, let's jump on over to the interview with my brother, Stephen. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kate.
So fun to have you here. First question, what's your official job title?
Well, right now I am an assistant project manager for a general contractor who is a pretty big contractor, a lot of national projects, and they're based in Chicago, but I'm out of the regional office in Seattle.
How would you define your role?
It is all things construction related to the project. Monitoring schedule, monitoring subcontractors, monitoring the budget, paying subcontractors, dealing with the owner. It's everything for the project.
Wow. So you're balancing all of the moving pieces.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Would you take us through your background and how did you get to the position you're in today?
Well, let's start when I was young. Our grandfather, Calvin, he was a civil engineer, and he spent 100% of his time doing federal work. And even in college, he was working for the federal highways, building highways. That when he was in college, he was actually a laborer and a surveyor. So he had a very strong mathematics background, and I always thought he was the smartest guy around. And so when it came to deciding what I wanted to major in, I was like, well, let's do civil engineering, because you can do engineering, but you're also smart enough where you can transfer your skills to go to business if you wanted to. So that's what I did. And then my junior year in college, I signed up for the Navy, and upon graduation, I was off to officer candidate school, and that was 90 days, 3 months. And so that's the boot camp for officers. And looking back on it, that was probably the most fun that I never want to have again, just because it was just every day was something different. Your mindset was, all right, let's get through this and move on to the next thing. And so after I graduated, I went to Key West to become a construction manager, monitoring all the Navy projects that Key West was building or supervising. So I did that for a while. And then my time was up to go to my next duty station. And I went to Mississippi, where I was part of the actual CB battalion. CB is kind of like a play on words. So CB, the letter C is for construction, and then the B is for battalion. But
Wow,
the
okay.
logo is spelled SEABEE. So the C is for the Navy, and then the B, like an actual bumblebee, is the mascot essentially. So that's why they're known as CBs. And so I did that, deployed to Kuwait and Afghanistan while that was kicking off in around the 2010 timeframe. And then after I got back from deployment, my time was up for a new duty station. So I went to North Carolina, where I was stationed with the Marines and acting as an engineer liaison. So helping them plan construction projects. And then we deployed to Afghanistan. And then it was kind of the weird phase in Afghanistan where there wasn't much going on, and we were trying to figure out what's next. And while we were there, it turned out that they were going to start pulling troops out. So a lot of our projects were demobilizations, tearing camps down, and closing camps. Camps as in where the military was stationed. And so after that, I got lucky, and my next duty station was in Spain. And in Spain, I was a construction manager and also a public works officer. So the public works is your utilities and your just overall facility-based management. So I did that for a while. And then probably one of the coolest assignments was I did a 90-day rotation in Romania. And we were building a missile defense site out there. First of its kind. And being in Romania was pretty cool. It felt like you were in the 90s. It was just something that was, you felt like you were from the future. And it was so cool experiencing that culture and helping out with this project. And then after Spain, I thought, hey, why don't we keep on doing this deployment thing? And I went over to Special Operations with the SEALs and MARSOC and other agencies, and I started assisting them with their contract needs and their construction needs. We deployed to Iraq, and that was in 2018, 19 timeframe. So it's pretty late in the game. A lot of people still don't realize that we're still there. But we were there. We were a lot of the operations going on were supporting Syria and other stuff going on in Iraq. On that deployment, it was time to like, all right, what do I do? Do I keep on doing this every 2 years, move to a different place, and then within those 2 years deploy for 8 months or what? And so I decided, well, it's a good time to get out and start building a family, start settling down somewhere. So I decided to make the move to get out of the military, and it worked out perfect where as soon as I got back from Iraq, 2 months later, I would be a civilian. So I did the job search. I'll tell you the truth, that was kind of easy finding a job. There are a lot of construction jobs and management jobs available to you, and they're all eager to learn from your military experience. And so I decided to land in Seattle to be close to family. And that's what I did. And now I'm with a great general contractor, and we're building. It's kind of funny. I wanted to get away from federal work, but they put me right back on a federal job. So still doing what I used to do in the military, but on the opposite side.
Well, I think it's a perfect blend of your experience, and you definitely understand the culture and the processes that are in place within the military. And so it's probably you understand both worlds and are that perfect bridge between the two.
Right.
How was the transition from military life to civilian life or working with a civilian company?
Yeah, I think the hardest part was trying to figure out who you were, as in myself. Like, the last thing that I wanted to do is become a person that is the typical veteran, and that's the long shaggy beard with the long haircut and grunt style t-shirts and just looks like he's still in the military or a wannabe military person. That's the last thing that I wanted to do. So in a way, I kind of want to separate myself from my past. And I'm not sure why that is, why I wanted to. I think it was just because I wanted to start new. And yeah, I wanted to start new.
Is there a difference in the operations or the approach to the work that has been different?
Definitely. In the military and the federal side, there really isn't a budget. I mean, they have a set of allotted money, but no one really tries to maintain that budget. And if there is an overrun, there aren't really major consequences for that. And on the owner's side or the private sector, there is a budget and you're sticking to that budget and we're going to make money. So yeah. It's kind of like working for a nonprofit with the government and then working a private business on the private sector.
Wow. That's really interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. That's pretty surprising, but the government gets to make their own rules.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Which was your favorite position while you were in the Navy? You had several different assignments and it sounds like several different roles. What was your favorite role? And then what was your favorite assignment? Because those might be two different things.
Yeah. Well, my favorite assignment was probably Romania, building the missile defense site out there. Favorite position was, that's a good one, because they were all great and they all had their form of difference that made them great. Probably my most favorite was when I was in Mississippi. I was a assistant company commander and you had people reporting to you and you were in charge of 100 guys. And looking out for them, if they got in trouble, you'd help them out and speak for them on their behalf and just guide them along the way. But to tell you, I liked them all. I don't think anyone stands out independently.
And it sounds like a lot of them transferred more than I thought they would to the civilian work. So while you were doing things, it sounded, just from the conversations we would have, I know in Spain, like you had a very specific job where it was loading cargo ships. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. So that would be the public works side. And
okay.
Cargo ships would come through our port and we would contract crane services to load whatever items that needed to go onto the ship. Okay. And some would be ones that you could drive on, and some that you'd have to use a crane.
Because that to me sounded very specific to military assignments. And so how that translates to civilian positions. But were your other positions, even that one, things that you've used or done similar projects to what you're working on now?
You can't relate apple to apple. It's more apple to orange. It's kind of like the same characteristic, but not the same item.
Okay.
So like an example, writing contracts and writing requests for proposals. That's where you're soliciting offers from vendors or contractors. That is a huge skill that I was able to transfer from military to civilian.
Yeah, because they, like you said, it's its own world. It's its own system. And so...
Yeah, like I'm not going to write a contract for craning missiles onto a destroyer right now. It's going to be I'm going to write a contract for countertops or something totally Like you're using the same skills, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You're like, oh, I did this once, but it was for missiles. Wow, Steven.
Yeah.
What were some of the things specific to engineering that drew you to it in the beginning? You mentioned how you looked up to Grandpa and saw the career that he had built and just how smart he was. Was there anything particular about engineering that was appealing to you?
I think it was just building stuff. I mean, as a kid, I'd lock myself into my room and build models all day, or build these balsa wood bridges in high school for then we would see how much they would weigh. So I think always this tinkering thing and building thing, I've always been attracted to that.
And you're someone who's actually using their degree today, which is admirable and not always common, but I think that's the amazing thing about when you find what you're interested in early, your career path can follow that.
Yeah, definitely.
What attracted you to the Navy and joining the Seabees and the engineering corps? Can you tell us a little bit about that decision or kind of where you were at your junior year of college when you decided to make that move?
Yeah, so I think I always wanted to join the military, and I realized this as a little kid, being a Boy Scout and having some sense of patriotism towards your country and being grateful for the opportunities it presented. I just sounded like the military was the place to be, based on those values. And so I always strove to be part of the military or give back in some way. And then, okay, so as an engineer, what are you going to do in the Navy? And I remember in high school, this one kid goes, "Hey, Steve, you should join the Seabees." What the heck is a Seabee? And I just kind of wrote it off. And in college, I went to a career fair, and the Navy booth was right there. And I went to talk to him. He goes, "Oh yeah, why don't you join the Seabees?" "What are the Seabees?" "Oh, it's our construction battalion. You're like usually civil, any engineer, civil engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical engineer. They all come together and join this core group of a command, and they build stuff and they go all around the world." I'm like, "Oh, that sounds pretty cool." And so I looked into it, and they had this program where in your sophomore or junior year, or even your senior year, you can apply for it. And if you're accepted, you go to officer candidate school right away. But the key is that once you sign during college, they pay you an E3 stipend every month. And E3 is a pretty low position in the military. But you don't have any military duties while you're going to college. So essentially, you're making $2,000 a month just going to school. And the time that you're in college counts towards your retirement. And so that was a pretty good deal. And I was working at an engineering firm at the time, so I was kind of double dipping, which was totally allowable. But yeah, it definitely had that financial parachute that I was able to pay. I went to an in-state school and went on a tuition, and pretty much 2 months of military pay covered my expenses for the semester. And then everything else was for living expenses and rent and savings. So yeah, it was a win-win situation for me.
And being a part of the Seabees, you had quite a different experience than a lot of people think of when they think of military. Can you kind of walk us through some of, you mentioned a little bit of what the Seabees do, but how their branch of the military works with some of the other ones and just why you had such cool assignments versus people that can be just anywhere?
Yes, yeah, so in the military, you either are considered a grunt or support, essentially, or your special operations. And grunts are the ones you usually think of in the military. They're the ones that are running and fighting and battle holes and throwing grenades and all that stuff. And then support are your logistics, your supplies, your drivers, and CVs kind of fit in between the two. We are known to build and we fight. So in World War II, we were building run. This is we were developed in World War II, so we're pretty new compared to all the other services in the military. And so in World War II, they were hiring contractors to build runways, and they would get attacked by the Japanese, and they couldn't fight back because they were civilians and didn't have any training. So this is where we came in. They said, we need to have a construction fighting force. And so essentially they took those contracts and they became the Seabees. And so
Wow.
that's where our origins came from.
Very cool. I mean, I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
And so like if you one of the best movies to explain what the Seabees are is John Wayne, the Fighting Seabees.
How did that look? How did your assignments look that you were military, you were fighting ready, but you were also doing these support roles. Can you tell us a little bit about how that looks of like where are you working? Like what is the day to day, the merge of the two?
So a lot of people, like a lot of the transition hardships that you hear from military are from those grunts. And all they did was fight because the only kind of transferable skill they really have is through their weapon systems and their soft skills of leadership and communication and being a strong leader and but when you're a lower enlisted, you really don't, you can't quantify those soft skills. And so that's where a lot of transition, transover skills are hard from. Can they do any task you assign them? Yeah, they'll do anything you say and they'll do it great. And so that, I think that is one of the best skills of hiring a veteran, whether it be an officer or an enlisted, is that you can outsource, you can task them with anything, and you know it's going to get done
Yeah.
on time.
What are some of the hard versus soft skills you have developed? So hard skills would be technical training and formal education. Soft skills are things that you've developed or are naturally good at.
So a hard skill would definitely be how to manage a project and how to quantify cost overruns and budget shortfalls. The construction project has three different phases. It's like your pre-construction, that's where you're developing the plans, creating all the construction documents, the construction phase where you're actually constructing, and then the closeout is where you're doing a quality control check and make sure everything was built correctly and closing up any loose ends. And during that entire process, you're writing contracts, you're responding to questions the contractor may have about how to build this, and it just overall business planning and management. And so I can transfer a lot of that skills over to what I did do in the military and what I'm doing now. And then for soft skills, it's speaking to people, it's writing communication, it's emails, it's time management, it's personality deconfliction, being a manager to people. That's the hard part right now, is because in the military, you could say, do this now. I don't care how long it takes you. Come back when it's done. And if you did that right now, you'd get fired. So, or you'd lose your team. And so that those are some of the skills that are also pretty hard, being from the military to transfer over to civilians is thinking about feelings. Now, as a leader, do you always want to be that bossy person? No, you want to be personable and like these guys, in the military, they're following you and not asking any questions. And if you think about that, that's a pretty cool thing. And I'd have never took that lightly. And so they definitely earned my respect, and I was always there to make sure that they were treated well. And so that bossy attitude, sometimes it comes out and sometimes it has to come out, but at the same time, that's your last resort.
Yeah, that also comes from being the oldest sibling. You know how to take charge and give orders.
Doing dishes.
Yeah, you started at an early age. I mean, I was your first cadet or whatever it is. I think just on a personal note, like that was the biggest thing we, meaning your family, were so curious to see how you would transition with just the structure of, the civilian timeline. And you have to have feelings considered, and knowing that you had spent how many years in the
12
Navy?
years.
12 years in a certain kind of work culture. It would have, we knew it would be a transition, but Stephen, you have pulled it off so well. And granted, I don't speak with, your coworkers and all of that, but just knowing you seem very happy in your position, so that there must be a lot of cooperation, and that must have played off well. So that's a big skill in itself.
That's awesome.
What are some of your day-to-day roles and responsibilities as a project manager or assistant project manager for the construction company? So you mentioned the three phases, the pre-construction, construction, and closeout. What takes up a lot of your time, and what does the day-to-day look like?
So we start off the day with a safety stretch and flex. And it's what it sounds like. Well, we get all the workers in a circle. We go over the activity for the day and we stretch. It sounds kind of cheesy, but safety is number one on a project site. And we do this because we want to let everyone know what's going on, what the hazards are on the project site, and to make sure that no one is in each other's way. Because when you have 100 people on your site, people are going to get in the way. So if you can minimize or avoid the traffic jams of people working, it's going to be a lot safer. And then we stretch. I mean, some people we don't like say, "Hey, go down lower with that squat." It's just at 7 in the morning, people are stiff, and so we're just trying to loosen you up a little. And if you want to do it, great. If you don't, great. But we're doing it for your benefit. So after the state safety stretch and flex, we usually on Mondays we do a team meeting, and we go around with what each person's working on. And this isn't like some type of micromanagement. It's, "Hey, I'm working on this. Do you need me to do anything else?" It's not like, "What are you doing and how fast are you going to do it?" It's never one of those types of meetings. And so the rest of the day is pretty much putting out fires, because even though you may have perfect contract drawings from the owner, nothing's ever perfect. Contractors always have questions. You're always doing budget updates, or you're just walking around talking to the workers and making sure all the work is correct and safe.
So you're on site for, is this construction phase?
Yeah, so we're in the project that I'm on right now, we're about 70% done. And so we're
Wow.
definitely in the construction phase, and it's really cool because we're about ready to put the drywall on where it covers up all the pipes and all the conduit that you never see. And it takes people a long time. It's a lot. It's really cool to see the construction progress and how a building goes from nothing to a little bit to a full shell. And then you're doing all the walls and all the mechanical systems, all the plumbing, all the electrical items. It's really cool how you just little by little, you can just see it happen.
Wow. Man, when those walls go up, that's got to be the first, like, okay, we have a structure. And then all the pieces come inside. I know each project is different, but which stage takes the longest? Like, how long does pre-construction take, like, compared to the construction phase, compared to close out?
Yeah, pre-construction would be the shortest. And then it would
Okay.
be followed by the closeout, and the longest is the construction.
Okay. Yeah, I just wasn't sure how long or intense the planning is, or if those are pretty straightforward, they just have to like plug and play numbers.
Yep. And then,
Okay.
like, what happens if you hit a delay? Or what happens if a subcontractor goes out of business? And you have to minimize those types of delays. And if a delay happens, you need to figure out how you're going to get back on track.
I have heard, I am not in any of the industries, but right now we're going through a lot of material increase in cost. Have you guys seen that? And has that been a delay for your project? How do you guys work with that when you're working on a massive project like this?
The cost increase really hasn't affected us. It's the procurement of it. Finding it and getting it here, or if it's not all already made. When we do a subcontract, we already have a set price of what we're going to pay for that material and the labor associated with that. And we do that in the pre-construction phase. And so it would be in their favor to buy that immediately as soon as
Got
the
it.
contractor signed at that price. Now, if they waited longer to procure it and materials went up, I'm sorry, but that's your fault.
Yeah, so that falls at the individual contractor. How many contractors do you use as an oversight construction company? Like, is electrical a different company? Is plumbing a different company? It's each piece is a different contractor?
So we have an electrical contractor, then we have a plumbing and mechanical, that's like your air conditioning, and those are usually the same contractor. And then
Okay.
we have a mason contractor, we have a steel contractor, and then drywall and metal studs, those are usually the same. And so right now we have about 45 different contractors on the job.
Wow. Okay. How do you keep everything organized?
Schedule. We have an overall project schedule, and then we do weekly schedule updates. During the week, we look at the schedule, see how we're at. If we're good, great. If we're behind, we need to tell the subcontractors you need to increase production or do whatever to get back on track. If we are delayed in some way, we do a thing called pull planning, and it's like planning backwards. What date do I need to have this completed by? And so the next phase of construction can begin. And you use that concept and you work backwards to make sure that you're hitting these milestones.
How much engineering knowledge is needed for this role? Like project management, is it crucial that you have the engineering background, or can someone from a different industry transfer some of those skills and find their way in the
Yeah, that's a
position?
really good question because I don't think you do need an engineering degree. I just think you need to have a mentality of being a people person. If you're in a program manager aspect for a construction project, you may need a little knowledge on how construction activities progress, but if you're not designing anything and you're not if you're not designing anything, I really don't think you need an engineering degree.
So maybe you're not using the degree you went to school
Well,
for.
I wouldn't say
Okay.
that.
I'm just teasing, but it's interesting how It sounds like you've developed a lot of other skills to pair with the degree that are what's transferable. Did you develop that in the military? So basically, the question would be, did those roles also require an engineering degree, or were they the ones that kind of set the foundation for what you're doing now?
I think they used definitely for the ones where I was in the Seabees or in the special operations or in Spain. Those were definitely the engineering types. And then being a construction manager, that was more of a quality control, making sure everything was in correctly and they're following the contract. And so, yeah, just there's a little difference between the two, but not much.
And how did they decide to put you in the different roles, or how much say did you have on what you did next? Can you kind
Yeah,
of
so
share what that looked like?
they have a list of open billets as in the jobs, and they had it. You could filter it so when your time was up, you could roll into the next job plus or minus 3 months. And so you would filter this list and see what was available, and you would create a wish list. Number one, Spain. Number two, Italy. Number three, Washington. Number four, San Diego. And they'd ask to give you like 10 different options. And so when you get a list of 10 different options, you're like, all right, we'll just see what happens because this could go any way you want. And like, I don't know how it worked out, but I always got either my number one or number two option. And so it just worked out. And then in the military, it's not like it's being at the right place at the right time, to tell you the truth. And yeah, it's nothing like you have a set path. It just worked out. And sometimes it doesn't work out, and it doesn't have to deal with how well you performed or how well you did. So sometimes it's just up in the air.
Yeah, it's not personal. And I think that's the theme of the military. You know, they take the feelings part out, and it's just based on what do we need? Who can we put there?
Yep.
Wow. But I mean, your first assignment was in Key
Yeah.
West. You spent time in
Yep.
Spain. You got to travel all over Europe while you were
Yep.
there. And you talked about your assignment in Romania. You spent time in San Diego. I mean, you had some awesome assignments, as well as doing your assignments in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I mean, you liked your position in Mississippi. I don't know if it was your favorite place to
You know
live,
what? The
but
food there was amazing. And the people there, they would give you the shirt off their back. And that was my takeaway from Mississippi. I mean, I don't think I'd live there, but they definitely have a place in my heart.
What did you learn from moving every 2 years, or of all the different places you've lived? What are some of your takeaways?
I actually kind of enjoyed it. And right now, like Beth, my girlfriend, will tell you that she'll always say, Steven, we live here. Like, you don't need to move or change jobs or go to Montana or Idaho. Like, you don't need to move. And I think I just have that. I've been doing it for the past 12 years where I'm moving every 2 years. And to like actually find a place to call home. I mean, it's pretty cool, but at the same time, it's nice to stay put.
I mean, what a life to live while you're in your 20s and early 30s, to just be able to travel and see the
Yeah.
world and experience all these different things. Yeah, you've had some interesting assignments. The one that comes to mind is Kuwait and your job there. Could you share a little bit about what you did in that one, because to me that one I don't quite see the connection of how that is engineering related, and maybe that's just location. Yeah. But would you share a little bit about that
one? So in Kuwait, I was the logistics officer and embark officer, and so I was in charge. So we'll just say this: like Kuwait was the first location because we already had an established military bases there from the first Gulf War, and we never left after that. We established a base in there, and we used that to fly different types of aircrafts into Kuwait to go to other countries because it was close enough. So that's your first spot to going to Afghanistan or Iraq, was usually through Kuwait. And they always needed some type of person to get equipment and people to those locations. So I became the embark officer, and I would be scheduling flights for people, scheduling flights for equipment, loading them onto the big aircraft, and making sure people got to different places. And it was kind of pretty cool because we would pick people up at the airport, and the driving style of other countries is not what you think of. It's not like it's in the U.S. where it's organized. They choose their own lanes, and they choose how fast you can go.
Wow.
And my philosophy was the faster you go, the safest you are. And a lot of people didn't understand, like officers, a lot of like upper captains and commanders, when we would pick them up at the airport, you could definitely see that they were scared on the highway. I'm like, this is how we do it, sir. I'm sorry. The faster we go, the safer we are. And they didn't like that. And I got a lot of complaints about it. But then I also said, how many accidents have we had? Zero.
Wow.
And how many accidents have other people had? One or two? All right. So I think we're doing okay. And we made sure that if the person wasn't comfortable driving, then, hey, man, you can sit in the passenger seat and be the navigator or be the spotter for the guy. I mean, you don't need to be in the driver's seat if you're not comfortable. And so, yeah, we were always going probably at least 100 down the highways in the fast lane, because in the other lanes, it was stop and go, but there was always a fast lane, and that's what we took.
Wow. I definitely would agree with the other officers. That would make me uncomfortable, but it makes sense.
Yeah, but never got in a crash and everything was good.
I mean, it makes sense. Wow, Stephen, that's incredible. Last question for you. Well, two more. What's something you wish people knew about your role? And I would like to do one for military-related CBs, and I'd like to do one for your current role with the construction company. So what's something you wish people knew about each role?
For the private sector, it was running a construction project is more like running a budget and schedule. Okay. While looking over a lot of people to make sure that they're safe, but they're productive. Military, I think we need to know that the military isn't as organized as we all want to think it is. There's a lot of controlled chaos, is what they call it. And they're just trying to do their best.
Okay, now final question. What's the best piece of career advice you've either received or would offer to others?
Be on time.
Simple.
Yep.
That easy? Be on time?
Wake up early and be on time.
Is that a Stephen Barrett original or did somebody share that with you?
No comment.
Okay. Okay. Oh, well, Stephen, thanks for your time today. It's been fun to talk about your career. I don't know that I've ever known like the day-to-day of what you do. I've known the bits and pieces, and it's just kind of fun to walk through more of what you do.
Yeah, it was fun, Kate. Thanks for thinking of me. I never thought I'd be on a podcast.
Well, here you go. Welcome to my world. Okay, bye, Stephen.
Kate.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with my brother, Stephen. I always enjoy hearing about some of his different experiences and his career. And I especially love the story about why he was initially interested in becoming an engineer after observing my grandpa and how he was able to just build things and create things and apply the knowledge he learned from engineering to other things. And that's definitely been something that I have admired about my brother over the years, is he can just make stuff. I remember in college, he was out of college and started to brew his own beer at home. And it was the time when it was really cool to have like a kegerator. And instead of going out and buying one, he made his own. And I just was in awe that he could figure out how to build things. That's just not something that I've ever played with. So I definitely admire that about my brother. And he is one of the smartest guys that I know, which is in part to what he does and what he's able to build. But I just think he's just someone that I've definitely looked up to and am so thankful to have in my life. So, Stephen, thank you for sharing today on the podcast and just the time. I really enjoyed connecting. I hope you guys are taking care of yourself, and I will catch you next time on another episode of Defining Rules.